Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with the latest high-level officials' passage through the revolving door as the former Secretary of the Treasury, Tim Geithner, trades in public service for private gain, joining the Wall Street private equity giant Warburg Pincus. William K. Black, the former litigation director of the Federal Home Loan Bank Board and author of The Best Way to Rob a Bank is to Own One, joins us to discuss the unsurprising move from the public to the private sector by the man who made sure that Wall Street was made whole with taxpayer money after they almost destroyed the economy. Then we'll examine the fate of the Trans-Pacific Partnership Trade Agreement and the Transatlantic Free Trade Agreement, TAFTA, that is stalled because of European outrage over NSA spying, much of which has been directed at the European partners in the agreement to find out what their negotiating positions are. The former counselor to the Secretary of Commerce, Clyde Prestowitz, joins us to discuss pushback in Congress and from the Europeans, as well as his recent article at Foreign Policy, The Trans-Pacific Partnership and the Decline of America. Then finally, we will discuss the uncertain fate of the Affordable Care Act following a vote in the House of 261-157 to gut Obamacare that passed with the help of 39 Democratic lawmakers. Dr. Susan Wood, a professor of health policy and the executive director of the Jacobs Institute of Women's Health at George Washington University School of Public Health and Health Services, joins us to discuss how political considerations overwhelm technical needs in the launching of healthcare.gov and what can be done to put Obamacare back on the rails. And joining us now is William K. Black, who is the former litigation director of the Federal Home Loan Bank Board, who investigated the savings and loan disaster of the 1980s. Currently, he's a professor of economics and law at the University of Missouri, Kansas City, and was the executive director of the Institute for Fraud Prevention from 2005 to 2007. He's the author of the best-selling book, The Best Way to Rob a Bank is to Own One. Welcome to Background Briefing, William Black.
Thank you.
And as I mentioned in the opening, Bill, this is not exactly surprising the latest high-level officials' passage through the revolving door where Tim Geithner is trading in his public service for private gain, joining the private Wall Street private equity giant Warburg Pincus. Managing director of Warburg Pincus early in Tim Geithner's career. So has he had a relationship with him going back to when he was in charge of the New York Fed?
I think he must have. It's pretty much impossible to have that position without having close relationships with all the heavy hitters, and Warburg Pincus was a very heavy hitter. And as you said, as soon as Geithner started, he got a lot of criticism, of course, and so the former managing director, Warburg Pincus, rushed into the media to defend him repeatedly, and I did a series of columns saying that, if this is the defense of Geithner, the defense has actually convicted him.
And this was at the time that he got the job, right, the Secretary of Treasury job?
Yes. And, of course, even then, people were tending to forget all of these disastrous years as head of the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, where he was supposed to regulate most of the largest bank holding companies in America, and did a particularly poor job. So there was an overall regulatory failure, but the Financial Crisis Inquiry Commission singled out the Federal Reserve Bank of New York for particular scorn. So among the worst of the worst, that was Geithner. So he was one of the key people that brought the crisis, and he was famously he was asked by the House about his experience as a regulator, and he said, "I have to stop you right there. I was never a regulator." And of course, that's true, but you're not supposed to admit it.
But isn't that what the Federal Reserve Bank Board is about, regulating the economy? I mean, regulating the banks, I should say.
Supposed to be, and supervision and examination is delegated within the Federal Home Loan Bank system overwhelmingly to the regional feds, and within the regional Feds, the one that is more equal than others by far is the New York Fed. So, yes, his principal task was really to be regulating, and it was a task that he didn't do at all. And so, you know, it was insane that Obama promoted him for his massive failure.
So this is this an extraordinary example of the Peter principle, people failing upwards?
Yeah, I mean, he was, except that he keeps failing upwards. The Peter principle generally said that you rose to your level of incompetence and then you couldn't get more promotions. But you need a Geithner exception to that, where you keep getting promoted despite failing at higher and higher posts. Geithner had failed before in Treasury days and in, you know, IMF World Bankish type phase in dealing with financial crises, although he claims to have been a great success in dealing with them.
Again, I'm speaking with William Black, who's the former litigation director of the Federal Home Loan Bank Board, who investigated the savings and loan disasters of the 1980s. Currently, he's a professor of economics and law at the University of Missouri, Kansas City. And you're also at the University of Minnesota, right?
Yes. My spouse just took a position up here at the law school, so I'll have some as yet not fully defined capacity at the University of Minnesota.
All right, well,
as well.
Already,
one of my prior jobs, I should mention as well, because it's critical to Geithner. I was also the senior vice president and general counsel of the Federal Home Loan Bank of San Francisco. And the savings and loan regulation was done the same way as banking regulation is still done today. In other words, the regional banks are where the examiners and supervisors were overwhelmingly employed. And the regional banks, in the savings and loan case and in the Fed case, are owned by the banks they're supposed to regulate. And they pick most of the boards of directors. So this is an insane conflict of interest. Congress recognized this in 1989 and eliminated it in the savings and loan context in 1989 in the FERIA legislation. But they failed to do the same thing in the Federal Reserve. So we have this complete conflict of interest that has continued to this day. And the Geithners of the world, you know, they call it public service. But especially when you're the New York Fed, you're not there to serve the public. You're there to serve the biggest banks in the world.
So Tim Geithner's new job is president of the Wall Street-based leverage buyout firm Warburg Pincus. And these private equity firms pool money from investors to buy companies within about 5 to 6 years. Then they sell them and return the funds with a profit of about after about 10 years. And they use debt to finance these deals and amplify their returns. And they typically charge an annual management fee of 1.5% to 2% on the funds. And they keep 20% of the profits from investments as carried interest. And carried interest, as you well know, is treated as capital gains and taxed as at 15%, whereas mere mortals are, what are we at now, about 37% or something?
Yeah, so this is Mitt Romney, basically. People got to, your listeners got to know about this in the context of Mitt Romney. Some of them may have known before. But this is an incredibly wealthy world, on a par, basically, with the most lucrative hedge funds. And so this is an enormous payoff. Now, remember, Geithner was not subject to federal pay caps when he was president of the Federal Reserve Bank of New York. So he has already been made a wealthy man in that supposed public service that really isn't. And remember, he's also the guy that cheated on his taxes when he was with the you know, the World Bank or IMF, although he had to eventually give that money back to become Secretary of the Treasury. And remember also that Geithner is not somebody from economics or finance. So he is not someone who is technically skilled. So the only reason to put him as head, he, of course, can't really be head. He's just a face person to get you in the door, and in particular, to get sovereign wealth funds, you know, things like the Kuwaiti Investment Office and the Saudis, to invest more money with Warburg Pincus. So he's a glad hander and a handshaker that's going to be making many millions of dollars a year, probably.
And Warburg Pincus, that's a 47-year-old private equity firm with about $35 billion in assets. But what distinguishes it from its rivals like Blackstone and Kohlberg Kravis Roberts is that it's privately held. So that, of course, probably is very attractive to the Saudis and others, right? It's not a public company.
That's correct. And it's also, in at least recent years, been much more tied to the Democratic Party.
In what sense is it tied to the two guys that run it are give money to the Democratic Party?
So, for example, the former managing partner that I was debating was with the Roosevelt Institute and the New Deal 2.0.
What about this guy Chip Kay and Joe Landy that they run? They've been running the firm since 2000. Do they back the Democrats out of ideology, or they just back whoever the winner is? I thought that's how wealthy people operated. They weren't didn't operate out of ideology, but out of pragmatism.
It's a mixture. The Koch brothers certainly operate out of ideology pretty much entirely. And there are some Democratic supporters that do that as well. But if you're asking, this was more Democratic leadership type council type viewpoints. So the managing director that I was debating was someone who was very, very friendly, as you would expect, to big finance and believed that the Democratic Party should be allied with big finance and comes out of the Rubin wing of the party.
So what's your sense then of where we stand now in terms of this whole episode with 2008? I think you may have missed the opening, my opening introduction, but, you know, this is a we're talking about Tim Geithner here. He's a man who's making this unsurprising move from the public to the private sector. And Geithner made sure that Wall Street was made whole with taxpayer money after they almost destroyed the economy. Now we hear from Elizabeth Warren and others that they're even too bigger to fail than they were before. Will this just continue on, this inexorable kind of juggernaut, the financialization of the economy, more and more of our economy being dominated by Wall Street and our politics being owned by Wall Street?
Until they cause the next crisis, and then the issue is going to be whether there will be enough political resolve to actually break them up and shrink them to the point that they're no longer systemically dangerous.
And
which is what people like me have been urging for years. But it does, you know, there's the Obama administration not only decided not to get rid of the systemically dangerous institutions, it decided that it would give special bailouts. In some cases, Geithner used secret bailouts through AIG as a conduit to bail out favored banks, including many foreign banks, by the way. So I think you'll see that many people will be very happy to take phone calls from Timothy Geithner out there in the world because, you know, big finance understands that the world works on a reciprocal basis and only klutzes have to run afoul of bribery laws. Right? If you do it in this kind of revolving door fashion, there's no crime under the way the law is interpreted, and you can be made vastly more wealthy than by taking a bribe and such. So those kind of old-fashioned bribes in the U.S. context are not entirely a thing of the past, but largely a thing of the past. You know, you're dealing with sort of C-minus bribers when they do it in klutzy ways.
Well, I guess none of this is surprising because isn't the joke that Goldman Sachs is referred to as Government Sachs, because you had former Secretary of Treasury Robert Rubin going from Goldman Sachs to Secretary of Treasury and back to Goldman Sachs. You had Hank Paulson going from Wall Street to the George W. Bush administration's Secretary of Treasury and then going back to Goldman Sachs. I mean,
yes, that's exactly what it's called in the trade and in Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you, the then president of the Federal Reserve Bank of Kansas City openly, to a group of about 20 of us at a dinner, said that in the modern era, we stage an auction for who will be the Treasury Secretary. And of late, Goldman Sachs has been dominating those auctions. And that's a pretty amazing thing for a conservative Republican to be saying.
Well, but if you use
the Obama administration.
Sure, but just to follow through on your analogy, or his analogy, William Black, if you're doing an auction, who gets the money?
Oh, well, the political official gets the money, and the political parties more broadly get the money.
Right. So if it were an art auction, the political official is the painting, and the company is what? They're the ones that end up with it? Or?
Oh, well, Goldman Sachs is buying the painting, and right. It installs – I don't think the metaphor works quite that way, but
right.
Goldman Sachs buys the right to appoint the Treasury Secretary of its liking,
uh-huh.
who is frequently one of their alumni.
I see.
Whether or not he's directly one of their alumni, he's someone that will do the right thing for big finance. Right, but
right.
Goldman Sachs means that not only will that person that they pick for Treasury Secretary do stuff for big finance, it will make particularly sure that Goldman Sachs does well.
I see, and essentially the others are just competing to have their guy in the same job, the other
correct.
Wall Street giants. So
yeah.
I get the analogy here. Okay, well, thank you so much for joining us, Bill Black. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Take care.
You too. Again, I've been speaking with William K. Black, who is the former litigation director of the Federal Home Loan Bank Board, who investigated the savings and loan disasters of the 1980s. Currently, he's a professor of economics and law at the University of Missouri, Kansas City, and he was executive director of the Institute for Fraud Prevention from 2005 to 2007. He's the author of the best-selling book, The Best Way to Rob a Bank is to Own One. We're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back in a moment talking about the fate of the Trans-Pacific Partnership and the Transatlantic Free Trade Agreement, TAFTA.